Go ahead.
Thank you all for coming. My name is Ricardo Coller, and I'll be presenting my dissertation this time, titled Improving Cash Flow in Consolidated Environments. Okay, the memory system that is CPU caches, DRAM, and disk is a computer component in charge of feeding instructions and data to the computer processor. And I'd like to see this the following analogy. Imagine the processor is a worker in a working trip. This worker receives some items to work on at a specific speed, which would be the memory system speed. Works on the item, move on to the next item, and works that way. Thing here to see is that if this worker start working on more than one item at a time, prefetch items, or do whatever with the item, it will always be limited by the speed of the bell, that is the speed of the memory. And that's what happens in computers nowadays. The processors are always limited by the speed of the memory. So in order to maximize the performance of a computer, you should match the speed of the processor and the speed of the memory. The problem in doing that directly is that the only memory device capable of matching processor speed, which is static RAM, is extremely expensive. And if you wanted to build a machine where we save a couple of gigabytes in static RAM connected to a CPU, this machine will cost more than $10 million, which is obviously unfeasible. And that's why computer manufacturers have figured out a more intelligent way of building machines. And they do this by using the locality principle. The locality principle says that at some period of time, if some piece of data is used, it's very likely that the same piece of data will be used again in the near future. And this is really a consequence of how we people are used to solve problems. We typically solve problems by subdividing in sub-problems, and that is we code by processing data in pieces of data, and at the time we process this piece of data, there is locality of accesses on that piece of data. And computer manufacturers have used these principles to build caches. The idea is that you place a fast memory device like a static RAM below the CPU where you put this hot data that will be used again in the near future, and place all the other data that will be used after that or has been used before in slower memory devices. And computers have evolved into a hierarchy of many levels of these memory devices. Typical model computers are made of CPU caches, L1, L2, up to L3 caches, then DRAM, that works with the main memory, and then storage. And, the typical performance comparison between each level is more than 1,000 times faster. And, the way these hierarchies are implemented has not changed much in the last 30 years.
Even CPU cache is 1,000 times faster than main memory?
It does more. That's much more. The way these caches are implemented hasn't changed much in the last years. Basically what is done is that all data is divided in blocks of the same size based on a location on the memory address space. Then this is sorted by some important metric, for example, frequency of accesses. And the most important, let's say, n blocks, if the size of the cache is same, are cached. So let's say we sort by recency, you will have then a replacement algorithm called LRU. Now, the thing is that these have been working, okay for the last years, but now there are some changes. The main one is that computer environments are basically changing, the reasons are virtualization, storage consolidation, and the effect is that now we have many, many workloads, up to hundreds of thousands of workloads sharing the same machines or the same storage. As an example, this is a use case from VMware. There's this hospital in Orlando which bought some ESX hosts to virtualize in a consolidation ratio of 11 to 1. That is 11 machines per physical machine. This brings two problems. The first one is that given that there are many workers sharing the same machine, it's very likely that these workloads share the same data, for example, same OS, the same programs, and there is duplicated content, which is really a waste of space. And the second problem is that we observe experimentally that having many workloads sharing the same caches leads to contention. This leads to wasted cache space, and this can have negative performance impact for applications. So
the beginning content is not really a problem, it's a side effect.
I try to see it as a problem because it's wasted space.
It's not a problem. I don't think it's a problem. You can, it's not a problem, but you can improve it, but it's not a problem actually. I think it's an effect rather.
Okay, so contention, it's an opportunity for
contention is a problem.
It's an opportunity for performance improvement.
Yeah, that's what I agree.
Okay. I'm treating it as a problem everywhere, so keep being a problem.
The side effect creates a problem, which is that cache space gets wasted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at it that way, but I agree that it's more of a side effect than it's not the source of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
From the workload,
the side effect, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. The contention is actually by itself not a problem if there was no wastage. Right?
Yeah.
So, just because that the wastage exists, is there is a problem that's introduced by contention.
Okay.
Otherwise, contention is okay. I mean, if you contend, some people would argue that it's better because you have more multiplexing of work. But in this case, the side effect is the problem.
So you're talking about the contention of the cache space.
So specifically, should I change this pattern or my approach to presenting this as a problem?
No, I think it's fine. I think it's fine. You could say that the problem, the contention itself introduces the wastage problem, wastage of cache resources, and that's really
that's
the
problem. Okay.
So
here's some examples of the problems I just described. Duplicated content, we saw that for two similar VMs hosting some web services at FIU, we saw a ratio of 1.9 to 1, that is almost every block in cache has a copy.
So you're talking about the content in the total disk content?
No, well, yeah. I didn't want to go to that detail, but this is the buffer cache level.
Okay. What do you mean by similar VMs, like similar workloads? Like two or something like similar or four years behind or what?
I mean, I could go to all the detail of this scenario, but I just wanted to say in some
case, VMs that run similar workloads. Because the similar VMs, yeah, I agree that it's not entirely clear what you mean by similar VMs.
Okay.
Better to say VMs that run in similar workloads.
Okay.
Similar applications. I don't know what exactly you mean there, but one of those choices.
Okay. The second problem is given that applications have a need for specific cache resources, and we need a way of modeling these requirements, and also a way of modeling the effect of placing many applications on the same machine, that is modeling contention and the effects of contention. And the third problem is, you know, contention itself as wasted space, and the fact that it increases linearly with the number of workloads. We wanted to reduce this contention, to eliminate. And finally, there is a fourth problem, more subtle problem. Things that in the last years memory has become faster, in storage as well, but not as faster as the memory subsystem. So that means that the gap between memory and storage speed is getting wider. And that's why basically some other layers of cache have been introduced, for example, SSD. And this introduced a new problem, which is that because the storage layer as a whole needs to provide some guarantees, for example, ordering guarantees for file systems, let's say the journal file systems, we need to implement the same guarantees at all the levels in the storage, for example, at the SSD. And the easiest way of doing this is just writing everything that comes into the cache directly, that is having a write-through cache. The problem with this is that this is eliminating the first objective of using caches, which is actually increasing the speed of the accesses. Now these the accesses, the writes to storage has to wait on the access to the disk itself, which in having a write back cache it will go just to SSD and come back. So this brings the final problem, which is the high storage performance needs, and the issue here is that typical approaches like write through caches are just too slow. So specifically, we have slow write through caches, and we observe that write back can perform 5 times better than write through. So there is some wasted performance there by using write through caches. So this is the statement of this thesis. We propose improving the state of the art in caching by first eliminating duplication of data in caches, second modeling application cache needs, third trying to solve the contention problem by partitioning workloads and improving the isolation of workloads use of caches, and finally achieving ordering, specifically ordering guarantees for write back caches. So I divide this talk per goal of the dissertation. So first I'll start with the duplication in cache systems. The basic question we want to answer is, will removing duplication in caches improve performance? And it would really help if we observe that blocks per content are used more frequently than location. So we measure this frequency for some FIU traces at the storage level that is there between the memory and storage. And we observe that is the case. When we access content when we access data by content, we have more hits for all the workloads we studied. These workloads are two VMs sharing the same host, two web VMs sharing the same host, mail server. Mail server, we thought a mail server would be a good source of duplication because of forward mails, spams, and things like that. Another workload we studied was a home setup where all the students in a lab share the same home machine, you could say. And because we share the same projects and we typically use the same OS, we thought there would be large amounts of duplications. Now in the figure you see that, especially for reads in all workloads, blue bar, which is access per content, is higher than the red bar, which is access per sector. So this shows that if we access content data by content instead of data, we'll have more hits in the cache, which would translate to more performance. So now, how to remove the duplication? One way would be to periodically analyze the content of the buffer cache and remove duplicates. That would be similar to what is done in ESX by the system called the difference engine, but we follow a different approach, which is remove check for duplicates at the time we write new blocks of content and at the time we read from storage. And by doing this, we were able to achieve better cache hit ratios. In this case, we implemented this cache, the block layer in Linux.
That's also a previous block, right? Similar to previous block, right?
Do you mean Satori?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could mention that. Yeah. Well, in this case, we implemented a typical cache, which would be the blue line and the gray line. And we compare that to the red and the green, which would be the duplicated cache we are proposing. And in this case, we see that the duplicated approach has a better hit ratio, which is specifically what we wanted. So, conclusion, removing duplication is good, improves hit ratios. So now, back to the second problem, which is contention and modeling cache usage. So, as I said before, applications have some requirements for cache utilization. And we know that if you don't give the application the required cache, it will have a very bad impact on performance. So we wanted a way of modeling these resources so we can compare the resource needs against the resources that a machine can provide, for example. And also we want to be able to aggregate these models so we can know the effect of, what would be the total requirement by placing two or more applications on the same machine. And we came up with this model, which is called the ERSS tree model, the effective reuse size tree model. And it's basically a tree where you have the smallest cache requirements up to the largest, which in this case will be 5 gigabytes. And the idea is that this tree can be used for provisioning, for example. If we know that we have a requirement of 100K, that means that we only need 100K of CPU cache. And let's say we had a CPU cache of 1 megabyte, that means that we could have 10 of these applications running smoothly on the same machine. But turns out that aggregation is not that straightforward, because we observe experiments that there is usually some extra space, which we call wastage, that makes up the total aggregated space. In this case, wastage is 25 megabytes, which makes 10% of the total of one of the workloads cache requirements, which is too high to be just avoided.
How do you calculate
this? The SMRC. Basically, the cache requirement, we define the cache requirement at a specific level as the cache you need in order to not have compulsory misses.
How?
It would be the flat line after the point that you start having a flat line in the MRC.
So, Ricardo, it would be good if you could put, let's say, a linear sum. What would happen if you're summing it linearly and what you actually got?
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. So I will point like here, and I will have more misses, and you could say
exactly. You in the upper one, you could have, okay, this is what we got if we just linearly sum everything,
right?
And this is what we actually got when we ran the experiment, something like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you can change the equation also accordingly. So state an equation that's first incorrect, right, and then fix the equation by bringing in base states.
Okay.
So
and this example is not that good also.
4-second is the one you got experimented with, right?
Yeah, when running both together.
Both together, and those are the individual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the prediction would be you would need this plus this, but you actually need more.
More.
Yeah. Yeah, actually that should be clear. So we have some modeling for the wastage, but only for LRU. And we observe that wastage is really a function of two things. One is the flood rate, that is how fast an application is touching elements that it's not going to use again in the near future. And this is for a specific period of time. And the second is the hit rate, that is the rate at which a second application is reusing elements. So, for example, if you have one application that is flooding the cache that is touching two elements, many elements too fast that is not going to reuse, this application is really flooding the cache with unusable elements compared to some application that is trying to reuse some elements that is too slow. So, basically, that's what you see in this equation. As you increase the flutter, you have higher wastage, and as you increase speed, you have a lower wastage. Let's see this with a simple example.
In the previous slide, you maybe asked what ERSS is.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. So you don't have to go into the details, but you can say, give an abstract view of what that ERSS is.
Okay.
Right. It's basically the working set size plus including considerations of reuse, right?
Yeah, okay. Right. Okay.
But you will have to state what it is.
Okay.
To avoid a question, because questions takes time.
Okay. So now I wanted to show a simple example for how this wastage modeling thing works. This is a LRU stack for mixing two applications. The level on top shows the resulting access trace for mixing applications 1 and 2 on the right. And the stack is used in the following way. As you touch an element, you put the element on top of the stack, and that shifts the previous element to the bottom. And the idea is that if, let's say, you access A.
So you have a 3-item cache. That's what it's for, 2-item cache.
Yeah. I don't know how to explain this thing, actually. I'm struggling with this stuff. I should just go directly, assuming everybody knows what it is.
Well, I think so what are you saying here? And what you described for the equation itself was fairly clear, right?
Okay.
At least for me, but I know the work. So
yeah.
We had to ask the others.
Yeah, I have one question for our question, but I don't know if I should.
I have the option of showing this or showing experiments that show wasted as increase the flood rate or things like that. Do you think that's simpler than this?
It all depends on how much time you spend on this stuff.
By the way, I feel like this slide could be much easier to explain if you add an animation. Like, let's see what happened with access 1, then access
2. Oh.
For instance, I don't know where time goes there, or, you know, what is the cache, or the stack.
Yeah, that will take too much, right? Yeah.
I mean, if you have an animation, it could be faster, but doing it with like this is going to take you a long time.
And
maybe there is a simpler example, but to me it seems like this is the simplest you came up with.
Yeah.
Okay, the simpler one is also pretty complex, so because there are too many characters on the board, right?
Yeah.
People have to parse everything. I mean, they have to read all those characters and where they are placed for them to understand that what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the other option was showing these relationships graphically as a plot.
That's fine, too.
That's easy, right?
Yeah.
So okay. I think the key here that you need to convey is that if you have a workload that's flooding the cache, the LRU-based algorithm will evict more important items from the cache that would be reused in the future and instead store items that are not going to be reused.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to show. This is actually flooding the cache. Foreign key is not going to be reused, so it's moving A just far behind with no use.
Do you need this stuff afterwards?
No, not really.
So maybe you can just simply get rid of that. And can you try to minimize this example somehow to say
assume. In there, you have the whole history of what happened in the cache. And I think you don't need that. Even if you have, I think these caches of size 2 or 3,
yeah.
Even if you have just an array of 3 numbers and then you animate that, you say, okay, this one accesses only one, and then this other thread comes and flush the whole thing, and then you have to you know.
Okay. Yeah, that's not true. Yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah.
Just because you're showing the stack over time. We allow you stack over time.
Yeah.
Which probably
you don't really
need,
that. Right?
Mm.
Okay. But you think that's useful to show these?
It is useful to convert that equation into a diagram or some kind like this.
Okay.
And some people may not get that. And the equation could come afterwards, like I suggested to you.
Oh, yeah.
Because this seems redundant. If someone already understood the equation, then why bother with this example, right?
Yeah, that's true. So we have this contention, this wastage. Just so that wastage actually increases as we increase the number of workloads. And not only wastage as an absolute, you know, wastage as a percentage, which is really bad. So we need to solve, we need to remove this notation.
What do you mean wastage as a percentage?
Let's say you increase the number of workloads, right? Let's say the new workload has a new workload set of 100 megabytes.
Okay.
If it increase linearly in absolute, let's say it increases wastage another 100 megabytes. And another 100 megabytes for the next workload, that wouldn't be proportional to the whole thing, that wouldn't be in percent.
So wastage is a constant per workload versus wastage is a fraction of the total working set.
Of the total, of all the workloads, that's worse, right?
So you could, by providing that contrast by saying that wastage is not a small constant per workload, but in fact
it grows
as a fraction of the total working set. And if you state it that way, then
because that's a very subtle difference, but it's huge at the end. Right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you had 1,000 workloads, and you have a wastage that's growing just as a fraction of a single workload.
Mm-hmm.
For 1,100 megabytes is nothing. But that's not the case. It's actually a fraction of the whole thing.
But that's an important point. I don't know. Maybe you can present it a little differently.
Okay.
So when you say workload grows as a percentage, I agree that it's not clear percentage of what, right? At least you can state that, like percentage of what.
Could be a percentage of a single workload.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's combined, the size of the combined
workloads. What is the
combined workloads and percentage of wastage divided by the working set of combined workloads. That's what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. So our approach to reduce this wastage is to actually partition the cache. So we have full isolation of the workloads in the cache. And the obvious question is how to partition it, right? I mean, how much cache to give to each workload. So
when you talk about the partitioning, it would be nice to revisit why wastage occurs, right, and where wastage is coming from. You talked about the flood rate and reuse rate, and then you can, you know, you have a nice progression there. All I'm saying is that you're missing one of the dots in the connections, right, to say, okay, the wastage occurs because we allow the two workloads to contend
with
on a global, with using a global replacement algorithm.
I think it's the same example, right?
You could, yeah. But all I'm saying is that dot is missing,
exactly.
And then that would motivate why partitioning solves the problem.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let's see the partitioning problem graphically. So basically, we have let's see, for two workloads, we have miss rate as a function of cache size, and we have two different functions, one per guest. And what we are actually trying to do graphically is to minimize the sum. So we want to minimize the sum in red as you give more or less cash to each one of these VMs. And in this example, we see that for half of the cash each, we have the minimum sum of miss rate. Turns out that this problem is NP-hard. And because of that, many approximation algorithms have been proposed. That basically all of them are based in the convex hull approach, which is just smoothing the function, so we can use a simple hill climbing approach. And we tried that for the cache at this level, but we found a problem, which is you can have requests of different sizes.
Once more. So you're trying to minimize the mix rate of combined workers.
The sum.
Sum of all the workers.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're trying to partition in a way so that it is minimized.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That wasn't clear.
Huh?
That wasn't
I'm
clear.
Just clarifying on if you're jumping too fast.
Oh. Okay. So if that was too fast, then this is not worth it. I should spend more time on other things than this.
I think you're spending like 10 seconds per slide.
No, this is partitioning.
Yeah.
I think it's important. It's fine. So what was the part that sped up too fast?
I think convex. You're talking about the convex climbing.
What I'm trying to minimize.
But well, you
like to say that there are existing approaches in the literature. Right, I think maybe what you're saying is seems as if you were the one who created the previous solution and you found it didn't work. But instead you can say, okay, existing approaches allow cache partitioning using the convex hull approach and that has been used for the CPU caches, right, or rather proposed for the CPU caches.
But you mentioned that, right?
Yeah. So now should I go to the actual problem or just say there's a problem?
I think this is fine. It's possible that you may be stopped like more frequently than we are stopping you here by the committee.
Could I ask
I have a general feeling like
that's not the point.
Unless you have seen this work before sometimes, because I have seen the college presentation before,
yeah.
It will be hard for other people to understand. This jumping is going really fast.
I think in general you're going too fast, way too fast. I mean, the slides are... You should spend a little more time. Probably have less slides.
Okay. So I'll remove it from material.
What I would suggest is that instead of showing the data for removing duplication and basically the cache hit ratios and also even showing that there were two slides with data in it, right? You could remove that and just present one summary slide. So you can summarize the result.
Okay.
Similarly for the wastage, when you present the contribution, right, you can summarize the results.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, the other thing is that I think what Sajid said is true. I mean, you didn't mention what you're minimizing, but just mentioning, I think it's good enough.
Yeah, exactly.
The slides you have are good enough.
Yeah.
Just mentioning. I mean, when we combine these two, what we are looking for is to minimize amount.
So Ricardo, I think it's very easy, right? Imagine yourself as someone who has no idea about this world, right?
That's not easy.
It's easy. I mean, yeah. think about someone who doesn't know anything. What is the least amount of material that you have to present to them for them to understand your contribution? Right. I think that's really the key.
Okay.
You're not even satisfying that minimum requirement, right?
Okay.
Which is why some people get lost.
Okay.
I think I was confused with that carb part. I mean, you show the two overlap carbs.
Well, that's actually supposed to make it simpler.
It makes it simpler, but not completely obvious, right? Still have to spend some time to describe what you're illustrating there. So if you can go back to that slide, maybe so you can.
The slide doesn't have any answers.
just lines. See? And
yeah.
It has S2, what's the y-axis there?
Yeah, it would be nice to have axes there.
But it's pretty obvious what I want to do.
No.
No.
It's obvious.
And then you turn this around, and then, I mean, why are you turning it around? Then the x-axis doesn't make sense if you turn it around.
Just for a visual trick, right?
Yeah. I think it's...
I don't know.
It's
I've been confused during the whole presentation, honestly.
I'm just wanting to mix this in the same field, so I have something, some unique function I want to minimize.
Thank you.
But then what is the red curve? I mean, how do you calculate it?
It's the sum of me.
It's the sum of both, right? I mean, you have this, and you have this. Imagine you put them together.
Okay.
Right? So let's say you give this guy zero cash. If you put them together, zero cash would match to full cash to this guy. Half of the cash would match to half of the cash of this guy.
So what you can put in your axis is, right?
Did you say like app 1 on one side and app 2 on the other
right.
side?
So you should put those basic labels, right? And then you should put, these are actually in this red curve.
Yeah.
Okay. So you on the x-axis you put cash size, on the y-axis you put miss rate. Okay? For both of these guys.
Yeah.
And then when you combine them, can you go over to the next one? The y-axis still remains miss rate. What is the x-axis?
Oh.
You can put an x-axis
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is the x-axis?
Cash.
It's cash to
there
one
there
application
one.
One.
Application.
It's cash to one application.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, it's cash to one application. So when you pick that point, you know the cash to one application, you can compute the cash to the other application.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what your x-axis here is. If you label it, then
okay.
it will be easier.
It's actually like the allocation of the cash that you are giving to each application, right? I mean, give
yeah.
a little bit to one, you're giving less
yeah.
to the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why
so,
I
want
to
so
give
it's more
one
like
right here, 100% everything to app one, and then
right.
the other, and zero to app two, and in the other side, something like that.
And then
okay.
that point over there where you... have another in x intersection, you can say that is the cache size.
Okay.
Right, and the x-axis changes as you increase the size of the cache allocated to the application one.
Okay.
So even with simple labeling, it might make things easier to understand for people.
Okay.
Because whatever you're imagining is all inside your mind, right? And you're only communicating a limited portion of what exists there.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, if this, I thought this was the simplest portion of this part of the talk. So if that is not helping.
I think it is helping a lot. But just you know, the labels.
Annotate them.
Yeah.
The labels
yeah.
will help a lot.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
annotate.
And also the fact that you spend like less than 30 seconds in this.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, that's what I was saying. You probably have too much content.
By the way, I have seen this. It's not easy because I have seen this a bunch of times.
Yeah.
I know more or less what you're talking about, but now I understand a little bit better. So
you don't fully understand it?
Before I didn't. I mean,
okay.
You know, combine them together.
It's just
by
a visual trick.
Yeah. I know.
Okay.
Well, it's not even a visual trick, right? Because you can actually formalize this thing.
Yeah, you can formalize it.
You
yeah.
can put an x-axis, you can put a y-axis, you can lay the point where the size of the cache is reached.
Okay.
And it's no longer a trick, it's much more obvious.
But explain the axis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if you put the axis, it'll be forced to slow down, and that would be helpful for the audience.
Okay.
Because you'll be forced to explain the axis.
Well, also, I wanted to show these without anything, because this is really any resource finding problem, right? You have
it
something
is.
Versus resource.
Sure, but this is not something new, right?
Yeah, no.
So make it relevant to your thesis.
Oh, okay. And also, I mean, this the graphical view shows what a convex function is easier. It's just smoothing it out.
No, I think
if I didn't do that, the other stuff, this would be very hard to explain.
No, I think this is fair. I mean, this is fine.
Okay.
And the previous thing should also stay.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
annotate
yeah.
it.
Okay.
Okay, so here the convex shell, the black curve line is
the new function you want to minimize.
That's the convex hull function?
Yes.
But the actual function is the one the zigzagging.
Yeah.
So why do you point out that minimum point there?
Well, that is if you follow a local search approach, you will end up in these local minimums.
So put the correct answer also in a circle later on in this slide.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not using that for this.
No, that's fine.
I could use it. That's what you're saying.
It is okay to have that circle, but have the real circle also.
Oh, okay.
Because otherwise it's confusing.
Okay.
Oh, so the first one is the hill climbing algorithm.
Yeah.
And the second one is some other algorithm.
So could you just simply have one algorithm? If you look at both of the plots, they have more or less the same information. Could you just put it in one plot and put it bigger?
Okay.
Because it's confusing when you have two plots having almost the same thing, because you have to look at both and see what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah, and animate the convex hull and animate the final dot.
Like somebody walking and
just show it.
I can show that.
No, you don't have to.
You could get the stuck here, for instance.
That would be irritating, by the way.
Oh, okay.
What I'm saying is that you have that first slot, right?
Okay.
On top of that, overlay the convex stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what I mean by animate. Make it appear. Yeah.
Okay.
Right? And make the final dot appear.
Okay.
That's all. I cannot animate the way you're talking about myself. So I won't even recommend it.
No, you can say something simple like if you run the same hill climbing algorithm on the convex function, then you get the...
You could have a slight refinement.
This convex function uses
the hill climbing algorithm. Yeah, I did. So it's almost getting it, right? Yeah, that was the point of the next step. I mean, it's an approximation, but for our purposes, it's just too much of an approximation. And that is because at our level, we are partitioning, we have different cache sizes, different request sizes. So this is an experiment where you have an application touching a million blocks randomly. And first we try...
This is another case where you can do the same thing. I mean, you have almost the same graph twice. Just put it once and animate it.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so let me go back. If you increase the cache size of this application, you will have a linear decreasing metric. But if you now increase the request size, you will have a concave mid-rate curve. And that is because as you increase the size of the request, you are less likely to hit the cache. For example, if you had a cache of 1 megabyte, you have requests of 0.5 megabyte, it is very unlikely that you will hit, because to hit you need all those 0.5 megabyte blocks in the cache. And the problem with this is the convex hull approach will...
So it also increases, it will increase linearly, but based on the cache size also.
No.
I don't see why.
Let's say you are at this point.
Yeah, okay, so if I have a cache,
The thing is that you are at this point, you have a gap. You are at this point, you don't have a gap, and you are at this point, you don't have a gap. That's not linear.
There are a couple of things that you missed that might complete the picture. One is that your axes are uniformly distributed over the entire storage. And second, that your cache line sizes are one block or something. Those are the two things that are missing here.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? That's really what you mean. What you're saying is that when you have large requests, you have to hit on every one of those cache lines that compose the full large request.
Yes.
And then you would have a hit. Even if portions of it is a miss, it's still a miss.
It's still a miss. You see why it's not linear?
No, because the way I see it is that since you're also bringing in bigger stuff, you might get additional hits.
No, you're not. That's the whole point. You're not bringing in bigger stuff. The cache line size. See, that's really important to say that your cache line size is the same across these two, and it's still like a page or whatever, smallest unit. The only thing that's bigger
is the request.
The size of the request itself.
Yeah. The cache is exactly the same. Just the requests are changing.
Yeah. So
the cache has been, the cache is using the same block size.
Yeah.
So that's true because you have no locality.
Yes, the axes are uniformly distributed.
Yeah. Well, you have some effect if you have very large requests in a small cache. You're more likely to hit on the stuff you somehow prefetched by having a large request.
Yeah, because
No.
I mean, you are decreasing the chances of missing by a very small degree, but you are right.
Yeah, but it's immaterial, right? I mean, given that your storage is large enough and your axes are uniformly distributed, just because you fetched a little bit more in a spatial vicinity of that is not going to improve your hit ratio.
If you're approaching the size of the cache, you should, right?
You mean the storage size is the same as the cache size?
No. What I'm saying is that you have a 1 megabyte cache and you have a request of 0.5 megabyte. By missing on that request and fetching a 0.5 cache, you're increasing the chances for hits for the next one.
But remember that your request size is still 0.5 megabyte.
It's still 0.5, yeah, that's true. So if it's still the same, yeah, that's true.
That's what you're showing?
Yeah, that's what I'm showing, yes. That's true. Yeah.
So do say that your axes are uniformly distributed and that your cache line sizes are small.
Okay.
They're the same across these two.
Okay.
And that might make this a lot easier to explain.
Okay. Okay, so now the problem of this is that both these workers will be modeled the same way by the convex hull approach, and this will lead to large amounts of error. For example, if you assign half of the cache, assuming you will get 0.5 miss rate, you will actually get 0.8. which is 30% of error, which is too large to be ignored. So we implemented a cache that uses partitioning at this level in a hypervisor using a local SSD cache, and we partition per VM. And we don't use the convex hull, so we use the full MRCs, and we apply some probabilistic search, in this case simulated annealing for the sum of the miss rates. We implemented this and got some results. This is one experiment in which we reboot 28 virtual desktops with a global unified cache, which would be a traditional approach, which is the dark dots, compared to a partitioning approach, which is the circles, which is our approach.
The other way around.
The other way around.
The lower one is better.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And we see that, well, in general, the trend is that by partitioning, we have a lower food time. It's actually 32 compared to 38 in average. 6 over 3.
So why is the time higher for partition in the beginning? Do you know?
Well, the thing is that this is the booting time per VM, right? No, it's not time. This is not time. This is just the VM number.
The average of per VM boot time, right? That's what
you're talking about. By having unified accesses, we are really giving much more cache to some applications compared to the others. So these machines that get too much cache boot too fast.
These are not average numbers.
It's just a VM number.
Just boot one boot time.
One.
Each point is one boot time.
Right.
VM one.
There are 28 virtual machines in total, and they are all booting at the same time.
VM one.
Okay.
With a global cache booting this time, and with a partitioned cache booting this time, and I'm just sorting them out.
Oh, okay. So VM, I don't know, 25 booted in. I thought that you were running, let's say, one VM, and it also starts in zero, which is a little odd. You have zero VMs, they don't...
No, it's just the ID of the VM.
Okay.
VM zero, VM one, VM...
Yeah.
But they go different. There is some warm-up of the cache, right?
That's why I'm saying it's rebooting.
Oh, rebooting.
Yeah.
So the VMs are running...
So it's reboot time, not boot time.
Previous time.
Okay. So you run the VMs, you partition the cache, and then you boot all the reboot all the VMs, and then you measure each time.
Yeah.
So it looks like essentially every new VM you boot takes more time to run, right? That's what you wanna.
No, what I'm going to say is
all the VMs are rebooted at exactly the same time, right?
Yes.
So you broadcast the reboot signal.
Yes, yes.
And then different VMs finish their rebooting at different points in time.
And that's what I want to say.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
I guess it's much simpler than just, if I just show average and just leave this complicated figure.
Yeah, yeah. Put the summary slide instead of the figure itself.
Okay.
Right, the average is greater
for
the
graph. Now I understand what you're doing. Okay, so basically, okay, you put all the VMs at the same time and got different boot times, and each dot is one of those boot times.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you have with your partitioning, it drops, the variation drops.
Also the variation. So really, just what I wanted to show is average and variance. So I'll just show those numbers and leave
the
thing.
Is the average smaller?
Yeah. The average is smaller, and also the variance.
No, the variance the variance makes sense because of the graph, but I was wondering if the average was
the average is also smaller. I mean, you have much more VMs above the black.
True, but you also have some VMs there which are higher than the
just
top, right?
Yeah. Just this.
Yeah, but the ones you have at the end are smaller.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
but I show the average.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Show the average and variance.
Okay. We have one more.
See, the thing is that the reduced contention, right? If you have a summary slide, you can show a few more data points because you did a whole bunch of other experiments also.
Yes.
So you can show a couple of, here because of time, you can show only one chart. If you have a summary slide, you can show some other numbers also.
Okay. Okay.
And someone might say, okay, you did only one experiment and that's your proof that this thing is better. You can show some other
data. Okay. Well, finally, we have the last problem, which is trying to add inconsistency guarantees to write back. So first, let's try to motivate the idea that write back performs better than write true. And this is not a very clear question because write back, although accesses just come into the cache and come back, they have evictions. And these evictions can affect future accesses. So whether write back or write true is better is not very clear. So we perform some experiments. And in this case, we use TPCC, which is an online transaction processing workload, which simulates, online stores. And we run a write true versus a write back cache with approximately half of the working set size as cache. And we saw that in average response time is reduced by a factor of 5 for all type of TPCC transactions. So, I mean, clearly write back is better, right? And the reason is that most of these transaction operations are synchronous writes, which actually depends on the completion time of the write.
So wait, before you go, I mean, you have to, in this slide, I think you have to be clear what you mean by write through and write back. Because there are many different ways that you could implement either of them.
That's why I'm saying that.
Well,
that is the specific.
Then you have to explain that in more detail. Because there are many, for instance, write through, what a lot of people could do is just write only to the hard disk, and then when you need it again, you fetch it again. Or you could write it to the hard disk. Once it acknowledges, you could write it to the SSD, and then at that point acknowledge the write.
What you can say is that the safe way to implement write through that people have recommended and used in the past is writing to the disk first, and then to the SSD, and only then acknowledging the application. And that's what is shown on the left hand side.
Yeah.
So while there are other ways that you might implement write through, but this is the safest way to implement it.
Okay, so I should actually say it. Yeah.
Yeah, because like I could say, let's say, because what some people are doing is that when they're writing to the disk, they're writing in a log structure fashion, and they're just getting all the sequential bandwidth. And that's a lot quicker than writing to the SSD in most cases.
Okay.
Right, so, I mean, all these numbers are based on some assumptions that you have to explain.
Okay.
The write back is, here you, although you say that the write back also has the eviction cost.
Yeah.
Yeah, this may, it may be a bit too early, but write back provides one advantage of merging writes. Or
well, I just wanted to say that.
That it's not clear what all this may happen.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
And the write back is it, I think that's fine, right? Write back you can explain, a, also explain a little bit to say that in write back, applications write to the cache and then the application is unblocked, but then at some later point, if the cache, is cache gets filled up, then you need to perform evictions.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So just at a high level, describe what write through and write back is before you jump into more details.
Okay.
But remember that in your committee, you have people like Chen Liu and Giri who might not be dealing with this sort of terminology every day.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so...
In write through hypervisor interface, once it's acknowledged by the SAN.
Well, the only thing there is that you write to both and you wait for the condition of both to acknowledge.
Can you send the write to both as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Both to acknowledge?
Yeah.
But the get should acknowledge once it's write to the written to the SAN, right? Why it should wait for the SSD?
That's what I'm saying, that he's making
there are many, there are many,
that you have that you have to
there are many like flavors of write through. This is the fake. Because
fakeness.
Yeah. Let's say you write to SSD files that you already acknowledge.
But
or the other way around.
It's fine because my data is written to the permanent location.
Yeah, but you're losing the fact that you could have something else in the cache. Right?
Your cache may have an older version of the data.
Oh.
But well, so then when you read it back, you might get an older version of the data from your cache.
But I would think that if the hypervisor sees an error in the write of the SSD, it will
mark it as invalid. It's just one approach. It's just
one approach. I understand.
Yeah,
but that's what I'm saying, that you have to be specific about what you mean by write through and write back.
No, this is the safest approach. Is what you can say that there are other approaches, but people have figured out that this is the safest way to implement write through caches.
Okay. Okay, well, we think this example is enough to motivate having better performance for write-through caches, that's a way of saying it.
Or you can say that this example illustrates that it is important to investigate write-back in more detail. And although it has the consistency issue, and I don't know if you even talked about the consistency issue and why people don't use write back.
Sorry, Wes.
Not at all.
So, and the other thing, that this is a write mostly workload, right? Because if you had a read dominant workload,
order status seem to be very, very read intensive.
I don't know. It's just one real benchmark.
Mm.
If you show that this is better at least for one real benchmark, that's enough to motivate.
No, because if it's true for one but false for the other, all the others, then.
Okay, you wanted to sell this to whatever people is using that type of application. That's enough for me. Let's say I want to sell to this guy alone. I don't care about anything else.
No. I mean, the point that I'm trying to make is that because you said here that write back has a problem of eviction, then if you implement a write through and then you're basically only caching reads, right?
If it's a read workload, it wouldn't make sense, right?
So
we just wanted to show one example in which it works. That's enough for us to motivate.
Okay, so Ricardo, instead of taking the approach that, okay, this is good enough for me, or that's the only people I'm going to sell to, I think that's not very, what should I say, a positive approach, more of a negative approach, right? A positive approach could be more like, okay, if the workload is read-only, then the right caching policy would probably not matter in your system, right? And assuming that the writes are important to optimize, and you can say why you think that writes are important to optimize in current workloads, right? Especially with SSD caches, if the cache can serve most of the reads, then the storage will see a write-mostly workload, right? So it is important how you tune the performance of the writes that actually make it out to the slower storage system, right? And you can then also state that in previous studies, we have seen read-write ratios where writes actually dominate in many workloads. And you can cite a few. I mean, even your IO dedupe work and the Borg paper and SRC map, we have all those ratios. And if you look at those ratios, the writes to read ratios is typically more than 2 or even 3. Right? So writes are, in fact, a dominant modality of access in any of these production workloads that we've looked at. So I'm just saying that you can answer questions in many different ways. It's better to be more broad and encouraging the audience than to say, okay, well, you know, if that's what you want, then I don't deal with that. Here's what I deal with, right? I think that's a little, first of all, it changes the atmosphere of the room, right? You don't want to go take the whole room in that direction. And second, it's not even true. I mean, it's not completing the picture. It's giving only a partial picture, right? So I would say just try to be more broad, inclusive of questions that question your direction, right? And see how you can still accommodate those contentious statements. Because in the end, I mean, I'm not saying for your PhD, I'm saying for your future career, this is not the last presentation you'll be making. You'll be making millions of presentations to people with all kinds of, all kinds of attitude problems, right? And so you want to be not the guy with the attitude problem in the room. You want to be the guy who can deal with the attitude problems in the room. It's just an advice. I mean,
I know.
That it will help you in the long run.
It's too late.
It's not too late. Yeah. You're still starting. I mean, you're not going to retire tomorrow, right?
No.
You probably have at least at least 5 more years after you make your millions of dollars.
No. I'm sorry. I take comments too personally.
I mean, and it's not just that. I think you have the answers, but somehow you want to sort of minimize the confrontational discussion. It doesn't even have to be confrontational. If you try to get into the other person's mind, although they might not frame the question in the best possible way and it looks aggressive, but if you try to understand them, sometimes it's not really aggressive, they're just confused. They just don't know what you're talking about. And you're not communicated enough about what's in your mind, which makes them ask that question.
Yeah.
Okay. So Ricardo, here you are trying to achieve the performance of write back in write through, or the other way, or the consistency in write back.
Okay, so I need one slide here in the middle of these two. But what I should say is that you have lots of dimensions for a cache, and you have performance and you have consistency. Mm-hmm. For start, write through gives consistency, but it don't give performance.
Yeah.
Write back give performance, but don't give consistency. Mm-hmm. We want something more in the middle.
Okay.
Right, and that's what we should be proposing. We should have some basic consistency guarantees, but not at the cost of having a bad performance like in the strike.
Okay. So
So the thing here is that this SSD cache should provide some guarantees, because there are some layers above which are assuming that the storage layer will provide order. And one case is journal file systems. For example, let's say you have a file system operation, a file deletion. A file deletion is composed by basically two operations. One is removing the block from the bitmap of used blocks, and the other operation is removing this file entry from the parent directory. The way journal file systems do this, make this both these operations atomic so they don't become inconsistent, is making the both updates, and then after you are sure that both updates are ready, you just commit this as an atomic transaction. What if you didn't have this, and you remove a bitmap, for some reason your storage mixed accesses and commit before removing this from the parent directory and crash, then you will have an inconsistent state because you will have a file which is stated in the bitmap as unused, but it's actually being pointed by the parent directory. So you have an inconsistency. And this is what can happen with a write-back cache. Because in a write-back cache, you get all the accesses, all the writes on top, but you evict at any order. The order for evictions don't have to be the same as this. So if, let's say, you evict this, and crash, and you don't have access to GSSD anymore, you have this storage with a file system that's in an inconsistent state. So basically what we want to do to maintain the consistency of the disk below is to provide ordering in the evictions. And to provide ordering in the evictions, we have two approaches. The first one is called ordered writeback. And the basic approach will be to store the order of writes and also all the copies for all the writes. Let's say linearly we have, let's say we're sorting by completion time. And then at the moment of eviction, we use the same ordering for eviction, so we maintain ordering and maintain consistency. But there's a slight issue with this naive approach, which is that what if you have two independent applications which are writing and writing, right? If you use the previous approach, you will have a false dependency between this and this, although they were sent in parallel. So having a linear way of storing these dependencies is forgetting about. It's avoiding the gains you could have with parallelism. So we store these as a tree.
So, I think it would be clearer if you use instead of 1, 2, 3, you use 4, 5, 6, right?
Yes.
Because they are not writing to the same block.
Yes.
Because to me, that number is the block address.
Oh.
But different people might have different views, and you probably don't have the same view.
Yeah.
So it's better to put different numbers.
Yeah.
And then you have time anyway. They are overlapping in time. You're showing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what happens when applications are in fact interacting? You have a multi-threaded application, for instance, or two client-server model.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to show next.
Just another comment about the previous one. That you said that 4, 5, 6, then people can think that they are in sequence.
So
I was thinking.
ABC,
yeah,
and
ABC,
XYZ.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, that's better. Okay. Yeah, to answer your question, I need a different figure, which I don't have.
Okay, but
but I should explain that. What we're doing is that we don't know, at this level, we don't know anything about threads, about dependencies. What we only see at this level are issues and completions of writes, right? And if we use completions, just completions, we will have something like this. But instead, we use issues and completions. So if we have an issue after the completion of another I/O, we assume that there is a dependency, although there might not have been a dependency.
Okay. And do you not have any process information?
No.
Okay.
No. We want to make this Yeah, we don't have it. We don't have it. So basically, at the end, what you have is a graph where having, for example, 3 pointing to 2 means that 2 was issued after the completion of 3. So this is a dependency, and we maintain this dependency, although on reality, the application might not need this dependency.
Okay, but this graph is very confusing, because you have 1, 2, 3, those are, the top 1, 2, 3 are sets.
Yeah, I think you need arrows to show that
oh.
1, 3 depends on 2. I can't see the
arrows. Yeah, the arrows somehow disappear. Okay, yeah. Yeah, but I need arrows, yes.
So you can briefly just say that one node to the other node can say, and use that to actually talk about the completion issue ordering as well, right?
Okay.
Say, okay, the 3 completed before 2, then we would represent it in a graph as a node of 3 with an arrow to the node of 2, right? Something like that.
Okay.
Then you can jump into this more complicated graph.
Okay.
And that will also allow you to, because right now you're talking about the completion issue ordering without any aid of this diagram.
Oh, okay.
You can use that as an aid for the diagram also.
Okay. So now let's say we are in the situation where we want to evict block number 4. So clearly before evicting block number 4, we need to evict everything that number 4 depends on. Now, because we know that there is no dependency between all these blocks, you can send all of these in parallel, and then all of these in parallel. And by doing this, you can achieve better performance than sending everything one by one. Right? That's basically what we do there. We also have a different...
You have to send just a dirty block, by the way, right?
Oh, yeah, just a dirty block. Actually, yes. And actually, we are not really evicting this, we're just cleaning them. We're just cleaning these blocks.
Yeah, exactly. This is just rights.
This is just rights. We're just cleaning.
Right.
I mean, you could evict the blocks, but what's the point? Because you can still use those blocks for future heat.
Yeah. Well, you're retaining only the most recent version.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
So here, I think you can improve this by... before you go into our journal write back by pointing out what what could be improved, right? What are the problems with the ordered write back? Although you are improving maybe a response time, you still have the same compared to the original write back, which allows all the writes to be merged and so on. This requires one write per write to the cache. Right?
Yes.
One storage write per write to the cache. Right? And you can, maybe this is a nice way to show the performance also, to say, okay, when we implemented ordered write back, we saw that it was not too different than write to, or
yeah,
in terms of performance or something like that.
Yeah. That's what I like to show with this. Let's say you have a write block number 2, and then you have another write to block number 2. If you want to maintain full ordering, you need to store all copies of 2.
Correct.
That's the problem. In a typical write-back, you overwrite in place. Mm-hmm. That's fast. In this case, you need to allocate new space to write a new copy, and allocating new space means evicting something.
So you should probably animate it.
Okay.
It's hard to understand that's going on from just a static graph.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you can show some of the nodes at a time and then go through the description. And the other thing, I mean, now that I think about it, the more obvious problem with the write back is that you have to maintain multiple copies, and you have actually data to show that the cache hit ratio goes down.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
Right. And it is worse than write to.
In some cases, yes.
In all cases. No,
the cache increases. Yes.
At some point,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's true. But where the cache hit ratio is important, write back will actually perform worse.
Yes. So then we have a second approach, which we call journal write back. And the idea is that, let's say you want to evict E. So before evicting E, you want to write everything that's before T. One way would be to maintain ordering as before and writing one by one. But at the end, what you really want to do is to have all these writes ordered, consistent, right? So what if we were able to send all of these writes as a single atomic transaction? If you were able to do that, all, you can have both states, right? Although you don't have anything which is consistent, because before it was consistent, or you have a full write of all these dependencies in one, which is also consistent because you are writing everything or nothing, right? So to have this everything or nothing atomic eviction of all of these, we use journal entries. So a journal entry in this case would be just a list of all the blocks that you want to evict from the cache. And the good thing here is that we don't need copies for all writes to the same block. We just need the final state of the data. And as we've seen, experiment, that's actually good. Okay, so before I jump here, do you think that's enough detail or should go to more?
I think this is fine. It's fine. Except that, I mean, I feel like you can have more pictures here to convey a message better.
But because you know that there are a billion more details, right?
Yeah, there are a lot more details. But I'm saying even with this, just the simplest form of what you're presenting, you can utilize some pictures by saying, okay, you had a previous graph, right? Let's say you take that previous graph and say you wrote all of this out, but then you're accumulating new stuff, right? And then show the ordered graph there, right? And then provide that in the journal variant, what would you keep in the journal?
Okay.
Right, for that next phase. People can actually visualize that you're going from one checkpoint to the next checkpoint and so on.
Okay.
Right, so whatever you wrote was in the previous graph, and let's say you did it using ordered modes, you want to continue doing that, here's a new set of dependencies that you now have. But this is a completely different way to still maintain the dependencies by performing or writing the latest versions of each block atomically to storage. Right?
Okay.
You can use that previous example and combine it with this so that it becomes clearer.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how, but maybe you can think
about
this.
Okay. Okay, so now we implemented both these options and also write back and write through for an SSD cache, and in this case we used a postmark, which is a basic file operations micro benchmark, just read, append, delete, and create directories. We are using a approximate working set size for all these files of I think 10 gigabytes, and no, sorry, 2 gigabytes, and in this case we are using all four write policies and increases cache size and measuring transactions per second for all approaches. And as you can see, write back is the one that performs better. Write through and order write back are the one that perform worse, for obvious reasons. And you have journal write back in the middle. In this case, journal write back was set up to have a maximum, that's going into the back.
Maximum transaction size. Transaction size of what? Something. Right?
Yeah. No, that's okay. I'll just leave it there. It's performing.
Yeah, in this picture, you can actually animate the lines.
Okay.
I think that would be better. Instead of saying that write back is at the bottom and write, you can say, okay, so the write back performance is, you just show that line, so that people can see the graph only with the write back or write through performance.
Okay.
And then show the write back line and point out that, well, this is really great performance, but the problem here, as we know, is consistency.
Okay.
Right? And then say ordered write back is the first thing that we implemented and evaluated, and this is how it looks like. And there you can see that ordered write back sometimes performs worse than write through. Right?
Okay.
And you can talk about that a little bit, and then you show what happens with general write back.
Okay.
But animate that number, the line.
Okay, this figure shows
basically why all the buyback was performing so bad. And the things that I was saying, in order to write back, you need new copies for every write. And the problem with this is that that uses extra cache space, and that decreases the hit ratio for the overall worker. In this case, we are comparing read hit rate versus cache size for all four approaches. And as you can see, for other buyback, you have lower hit ratio. That's because of the wasted space for copies.
Yeah, I would say that you could actually move this chart to before you talk about the journal write back.
Okay, so that makes more sense.
Ordered yes. write back reduces the cache hit ratio even below the write through, right? And,
yeah.
And that's a problem. So are there techniques that will allow us to maintain the same hit ratios?
Okay, yeah, I like it. Now, I talked about two dimensions. It's performance and consistency, but there is a third one, which it's very clear in for write-through versus write-back. In write-through, the state of the disk at the end has the same state as the cache, has the same state as the application is seen. But in the case of write-back, we are delaying, although the state of the back-end file system is consistent, it's a bit behind in the past. There is some stealth for that. So another dimension for caching is stealth. So we have performance consistency in the stealth. So again, for write through we have bad performance, consistency, no stealth. In the case of all the modified write back.
What do you mean by stealth?
How far in time behind is the state of the file system?
Could be time, or it could be in terms of how much data is stale.
Also.
Data.
Yeah.
Either way is fine.
Yeah.
In the former and so.
Yes. You see that evictions are delayed. Right?
I just wanted to know the definition.
Okay. Okay, so for example for Juna write back we have with performance, consistency, but stems. So we wanted to introduce a way of trading off these two, because as you increase the stemness, you can have better performance. You can have longer transactions. You can evict. Okay, as you have more stemness, you can override more blocks. As you have less stemness, you go more into the side of write through. Zero stemness would mean a write through cache. Mm-hmm. Would mean bad performance. So we implemented a way of trading off these two by limiting the size of the transactions. And we implemented these two, and we ran an experiment, which is fixing the cache size at this point, and then changing this parameter for stemness. And as you increase it, you can go from the performance of write-through to the performance of write-back. So here you can see that you can use this log to really transform our workflow from write through to write back, which is what we wanted, something in the middle, and we can control it. Okay, so yeah, that's all for the write back ordering guarantees. So we saw the journal at write back can give these guarantees, and you can trade enough stainless and performance. And now the conclusions for all the dissertation. We saw that removing duplication in caches is good. It can improve performance. Also, we have a model for wastage for LRU, and we saw that this depends on parameters like flop rate and hit rate. Also saw that wastage can be reduced by partitioning caches, and partitioning for out of core caches like SSD caches should not use the convex hull approach. And finally, we showed a way of modifying write-back so we can provide ordering guarantees for maintaining file system consistency. And as future work, well, this is my vision for future work for partitioning, which is that there should be more support in terms of hardware for CPU cache partitioning. There are some proposals, but there's no real hardware that can do this, and also we need we probably need some changes in the way operating systems and programs are written to take advantage of this partitioning. We don't know how to do that. And also, I would like to see some augmentation in the storage protocols to support partitioning. For example, SANs don't have any idea about VMs or workers or anything, so basically that is why you could have webpage and not these kind of things on their caches. And finally, I'd like to have a better understanding of webpage. Expand my observations from NRU to any replacement algorithm and really understand why it's happening. I guess we can jump all of these stuff, right? The publications and all that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
The future looks like, can you go back to that?
Yeah.
The first bullet is something you're saying, well, I'd like it to happen, but it's not something that you would do, right?
No.
And it's a hardware solution.
Yeah.
So that's not feature work for you in some sense. I mean, and it is not feature work for you. Well, maybe it follows from your dissertation that this is important.
Well, my feature work would be, assuming that this happens, how to adapt OSs to use. That's the feature work I would like to follow.
And that is a requirement before you can pursue that line of feature.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. So you're saying that because this is a serious problem, you believe that caches of the future will need to be partitioned by hardware itself, or
well,
at the hardware level.
Yeah, I mean, after all these theses, my feeling is these problems we are not really solving these problems. We need hardware support.
Right.
So that's the real target, that's the real solution. So we need some way, somehow, moving on that direction. That's the direction I would like to call.
Can you go back to the previous slide, to the conclusion summary slide? Right, so, I mean, I'd like you to sort of look at the applications of your work also as part of this conclusion, right? Because you say that wastage can be modeled.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But I see the modeling as simply an enabler, rather. How are you going to use this work, right, to provision caches more accurately?
Okay.
So that the effects of contention.
So you talk about scheduling.
Well, effects of contention are eliminated or overcome, right, by provisioning caches adequately to also allow for wastage, right?
Yeah.
Right, that's sort of the application of this work. And then you can say that, yes, scheduling is one. I mean, maybe provisioning, scheduling, also, you know, in your related to your future work slide, you can state that we saw that the wastage actually is a very serious problem. And as consolidation ratios increase, it is, it would be important to have hardware solutions for cache partitioning. And assuming that this happens at some point in the future, then what are the systems questions that need to be addressed?
Okay.
Right. So then you can talk about those as your future work. So talk about the applications of what you have here, and separately the systems side of the future work.
Okay.
As opposed to the hardware side, because the first bullet of the future work seems like something that's not up your alley, right?
Oh, okay.
You're saying that that's important, and then there are new problems that we would have to solve, and...
Yeah.
Okay. And overall, I feel like the future work is kind of one bullet beyond each of your works, right? I mean, would be nice to have some sort of a broader vision of what you think is the future direction for caching. And maybe this is it. Maybe that's all there is. But I didn't get that sense that you're looking at the broader vision. It seemed more like just one step next to what you did, right, along each direction. So I don't know. I mean, I don't have any good suggestions. And if there's nothing else, this is fine. But I just want you to think more creatively if you can.
Okay.
More broadly.
Okay.
You know, I had the same problem, and something that you told me that helped me was to think like, if you were looking for an academic position, and people want to see what you are going to do in the next 5 years, and you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something that you feel is important, and you have the skills to do it, and or some at least some part of the skills to do it, like, but a more long-term vision.
Okay.
And the conclusions. For instance, here there's one point or one connector that's missing is, before you say wastage for LRU can be modeled after parameters like flood rate and hit rate, you can say that because of consolidation, there is wastage of cache space, and then people will understand what you mean by wastage, right? Because people may have forgotten what you mean by wastage before you get to this slide. So instead of directly stating the conclusions, you can give some background, say, and maybe this is, you know, this will help to look at your problem slide and the overall picture. Say there is consolidation, and consolidation causes multiple problems. And one is that the content in caches get duplicated. The other is that there is the contention of cache space introduces cache wastage. So, in this thesis, we present contributions that address each of these problems. And maybe in that way, you can include all of these. But before you talk about these bullets, you can give some context again.
Okay.
Like just introduce the conclusions rather.
Okay. I think in the fourth bullet, you should have saying that convex smoothing technique doesn't help, you can say what you need.
Okay. So you can say that as well as what you did, what your contribution was.
Oh, I feel that for all that work, although it's not a very important conclusion, that's the most important. All the techniques don't work.
They don't work, and here, and talk about the technique that you developed and which works. And you say that we showed that this specific technique actually works better, right? And then again, for the write back, we introduce the problem.
Okay.
And then state the conclusion. And now you can actually give a little bit more to say that we tried the ordered write back and we saw these problems occur with ordered write back. So we developed a much more improved version of write back that preserves consistency. And it provided good performance as well.
Okay. Okay.
Can you put the page number by the
way? Oh, okay. So I'll try to find out all the things.
Yeah, because
page number. Leaving more for him.
Because
you have the recording.
Oh yeah.
I think in the beginning, it seems your solutions were mostly between storage and memory. So instead of saying from the CPU perspective, you should rather introduce a problem from the memory.
The thing is that there's a lot of work that's specific to CPU caches from my thesis.
So could you instead position it this way, okay? You could put the memory hierarchy and say, okay, so I started by looking at CPU caches, then I looked at memory caches, and I looked at storage caches. And in all those three areas, you added something new.
is it possible for you to look at it that way instead of?
Go back to that,
okay.
The overview picture that you have. Maybe you can bring it in there, somewhere.
You mean at the beginning, right?
Yeah, you had some sort of a flow chart.
Not okay,
maybe in this one, but also there's one more where you have problems, yeah. Go back to that problems.
I have it here.
Yeah.
So which part is related to shooting?
Contention, for example, is related to any kind of cache. Duplication could be related to any kind of cache. It's just that we work on a specific level.
But it can be applied in general to any cache.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, all of those could be applied to any cache, right? But
yeah.
Those that have specific.
You know,
yeah.
You can reuse the same slide in your conclusion.
This one?
Yeah, but now add the solution.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that. Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And then people will can
yeah.
get the whole picture of your.
Okay.
Okay, what are the other comments? Let's go through the comments quickly. I have to go in 20 minutes.
Well, one was don't have things like that, just summaries.
Yeah, the summary slides.
Yeah, that makes my life. Yeah.
No, but don't lose the slides. Put it in the backup slide.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And have backup slides, and more backup slides are better.
Also, be careful to, when you're showing a graph, be careful to explain the x and the y axis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, here I'll remove the example. Okay.
Yeah, I think the animations are very useful. When I mean animations, it's not complicated animations. Just make things appear one after the other.
Okay.
Instead of all at once. Exactly.
I'll do that just for fun. Yeah.
Okay, so.
I think in some of the pictures you're most, just copy pasting pictures, like it's kind of overlapping with the header. Make sure you.
Oh, like this one. Yeah, okay.
And there, for instance, the upper number is missing.
Yeah.
Because of the order.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I didn't know.
So, this is more related to the content. Do you have a formula of the wastage somewhere?
This one.
That one. Yeah. So, there you have the flood rate, which is a PF.
Yeah.
But that flood rate for a single process, right?
Oh yeah, heat rate is the other process.
The heat rate.
Yes.
So that means that the wastage is different depending on what, or if you use one process or the other, it will always be the same.
No, you have to look for both sizes, right?
Oh,
this is how one is affecting the other one.
I see.
What
so
I'm making
the
is how this one is affecting me.
The wastage is relative
to
the
one
process that is
yeah,
point. Okay.
Exactly. Yes.
That's a good point, and that connects to the previous slide, right? Or the previous where you had the linear increase of wastage, right?
This one.
Right here. I think first of all, you need only one of these graphs.
Okay.
Because the other graph is just distracting. Because high-level message is very simple, that
wastage
increases. And to explain why it does increase linearly, you can say that later on we'll show that each additional workload interferes not just with one of the existing workloads, interferes with all the existing workloads.
Okay.
Right? And there is we'll show you how it does.
Okay.
Subsequently.
Yeah, I'll write it.
Okay. Yeah, just if there are two graphs and you're using just one of them, just show one of them. I think it's better.
Okay.
Yeah, another comment I have here is that you had an LRU frame. Slide?
Stuck.
No.
Not
actually,
like
it was at the very beginning. No.
Yeah.
Well,
the one with the red thing. Right?
Yeah, well, you used that like for, and I'm not kidding, was a second.
Yeah.
And we have it already.
Oh, yeah.
The next
I have that, right? The one, I'm telling you which slide it is.
Yeah. Which is probably fine. Probably you don't need it, right?
That's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 seconds. Slide before the new computing paradigm. Nobody could
watch that. Okay.
If you closed your eyes, like, blinked, you missed it. the one before this.
Neither. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
The one before this.
You want the brain to work.
Yeah. Can you go to the next one?
Next one, this.
I'll go back.
This.
Yeah, this one, I think. Either this one or the one with. Yeah.
I did this one and this one in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Or both.
Yeah, both in 2 seconds. Yeah.
It's not a race. Go that way.
What is the color code?
Hotter to colder,
that's why I wanted to show.
Yeah, it would be better to just say that, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so another comment I had was that in the last part of the presentation, you were talking about journal file system and, you know, write back and write through. So it seems, based on the figures only, it seems like everything you were doing were done at the journal file system.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes.
So
I should say that. Yeah.
So and you're not.
In that case, it's specific to that, because I mean other layers in the hierarchy don't need ordering guarantees.
Right. Oh, I see. Okay, but. But could be journal file system, or could be any kind of file system.
Hmm. Not any kind of file system that require ordering guarantees.
Right. But
yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it would be good to say that to ensure consistency, file systems write to storage in very specific order. And let's look at the example of journaling file system.
Yes.
So journaling is just one variety of file
system. You can have self-updates, or you can have synchronous.
Copy and write.
Yeah, copy and write would be the same.
Yeah, but another comment about that is that all the work that you did, since it was next to the journal file system, if you can go to that slide, very quickly. Yeah, hold on. There. It seems like, because you have that in orange, right? So it seems like everything you're doing...
In this chapter is related to this.
I understand. So, but it seems like everything you're doing is happening at the journal file system level. It's like you're changing the file system itself.
Oh, okay. No. It should be the other way around. Okay. Journal file system is above, and this is the system.
Right. But then you should highlight it's the arrow, but not the journal file system.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's okay.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. That would be better.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So you have a. You have a slide which has a title stating using the tree for provisioning.
Yeah, they didn't say anything about provisioning. Yeah.
No, using the tree for provisioning, yeah.
That's it.
Go to the previous slide. Okay, so after this slide, you have a slide with title using the tree for provisioning. And there's where's this tree coming from, right?
Okay.
Would be some...
that's true.
It's like green computing.
I have no idea
what that is. What's the tree?
Yeah, think about all your slide titles.
Yeah. Okay.
You can make more descriptive titles that actually flow better.
Okay.
By the way, you said something like, because you wanted to avoid the discussion with Sajeev, you said, yeah, Satori also does the same thing. And that's not true.
Not, but... Let's say it does.
Yeah, that's the whole problem.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
What?
Right? Satori doesn't do exactly the same thing. You do some things differently, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you actually detect duplicates when you're writing to the storage.
Yeah. We have a few improvements from the software.
Yeah.
We improve IO as well. It's not pure duplication.
Satori detects duplication when the data is first written to the table.
Yeah. In that sense, it's the same.
So what is the extra?
The extra is we know that even if we don't have the duplicates in cache, mm-hmm. we know, for example, the two blocks are the same.
In the disk.
So you get one of the blocks, you have it on the cache. That means that you don't have to read the second one, the duplicate from this, because you know that this is a duplicate.
Satoru will just read it, and after it reads, it says, oh, it's a duplicate, so I have a duplicate. We remove this first, this second item. That's one, for example.
So have a quick answer for those questions. I mean, I know that you want to save time, but it's better to answer the question in 10 seconds or 30 seconds than to not answer it at all, right? Yeah. Or to answer it incorrectly and say something like, yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I agree that saying, yeah, let's assume it's the same, it's a bit impolite, not polite.
Yeah, because it could also convey the message that you don't really care, you know, what the other person thinks. And it's fine if he thinks the wrong thing. I don't really care. That's the message you're giving, right?
Yeah.
You probably don't want to give that message.
So just to understand the difference in Satori and what you're doing, basically in Satori you are saving just memory, right?
Yeah.
And in your, you're saving memory and the
file.
And you could also say that Satori happened at approximately the same time. It was a parallel work, right?
Yeah.
Because we don't even refer to Satori in our paper.
No.
Is it?
Yeah. It was at the same
time. It was at the same time.
Satori was an OSDI and December and February.
Because if a question like that implies, okay, someone else did that work, why are you redoing it? Right? And you can say that, well, it was a, we did this at the same time, and even so, there are differences in these two works.
Okay.
And point out the difference.
Hopefully we are doing the same.
Yeah.
Okay, so any other comments?
Yeah, well, my feeling is that there are too many slides.
There's too much content, or I could use the same content to summarize. Too much content.
Too much content, I think.
Okay.
You might actually consider, you know, when you have the problem slide, go back to that. You can gray out some of the portions and say, okay, here, today I'm going to talk about only these parts instead of talking about everything. Yeah,
that'd be great.
See, the thing is, there is a trade-off. You can talk about everything and people understand like 50% of everything, or because you have very little time to explain things, right? Or you talk about a subset of the things and people understand 60% or 70%, a little bit more, because you have more time to explain things.
Well, I would remove the content thing. It's just too simple.
Yeah, so remove it. I mean, say that, okay, but show it in the problems and in the conclusions.
Okay.
I'd say you didn't talk about this, but here are the conclusions.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's good, because that's probably more, it's not related to the others, but...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
By the way, I do want to see that 3D graph of...
You mean for service?
Yeah, performance. Before you... Because right now you have sort of a matrix of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that 3D, if you can draw it, it would be much...
Okay.
Much nicer to look at.
Right. Okay.
Can you go back to that table?
Yeah, know what you mean. I was just lazy to do it.
Well, now you have a few more days.
Yeah.
And you can do it.
No, no, right?
This one. Yeah.
So how could you make this 3D?
There are three dimensions, performance, consistency, and staleness.
But, I thought about that too, and I actually was looking for a way to do it in two dimensions only, because the three dimensions would be complicated, right? I mean, it would be hard to see.
But what you could do is like have a cube, like a very semi-transparent cube, and then once you have a cube and you align the axis around it, then it creates a 3D, what is the term for it? But it creates a 3D effect on a 2D surface.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When you put the points, it's still okay.
I don't visualize it that.
Yeah, I don't know.
There are actually five dimensions in this plot.
There are five?
Yeah. I mean, the three performance, consistency, and staleness, and then there's another dimension which is yes or no.
No.
That's a value in each dimension.
That's a value, okay.
Yeah.
So
Well, the good thing is that staleness and performance are actual numbers. Consistency is just a yes or no.
If you want to do it,
like, could you make a X, Y with colors?
Look at that.
So yes and no.
What is happening is that you want to write something like this.
In the middle.
And then something like this. But you see, things get complicated, right? So
So what if you turn the turn this guy a little bit? So we are what? So you can look at this surface and this surface.
So basically, what you want is a spider plot. That's the name of it.
No, you can draw it with...
The spider plot actually makes
spider
more
plot,
sense.
You want it to spider plot. Spider plot? Yeah, that's the name.
It's like a web.
Yeah,
for instance, I have a plot like that that I need for.
That I have here. One is like IOPS. Another one is bandwidth, and another one is, I don't know, cost, right? And I have, let's say, or capacity. And then I have SSDs, that is high IOPS, high cost, and let's say medium bandwidth. And then I have SATA, that is, low capacity. Low capacity, and this. And then I have SATA, that is something like high capacity, low IOPS, and higher bandwidth, and stuff like that, right?
But you have five options, four options.
Four triangles.
So you can
animate it if you want.
It's a spider.
Merging them all together, you can...
The bad thing about this is that it's a Boolean shot.
Yeah, it's a Boolean,
not
so it's going to have...
So
and these two are going to overlap.
It's a little bit more awkward, yeah.
Well, actually, there, that's fine, because order it right, like, performance is not really a yes or no, it's a bit more no and yes.
Yeah, actually, yes.
Okay, so then it's cool.
So your triangle should be lower than the right.
Yeah.
Right.
And actually, you also have an animation here that says you go up and down, you can have another line that says, okay, we can do this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just prepare, right?
No, I don't.
This is your part of the of the dissertation, the final part, and not the extreme final, but almost there. All right. Any other questions or comments?
No.
I think in general you need to go a lot slower and have a lot less content.
Yeah. I would say also have a summary slide after each of your contributions.
Okay.
As you don't
because
have
I
that.
jump to the next
to the next one without a summary.
Okay.
The last slide in the previous one is like a data plot, and then there's no summary for that portion of your dissertation.
Okay.
So have the summary even after the last one, which is the write back. Have a summary just for that part, and then you have a conclusions of the thesis slide with the picture, where you know. Basically borrowing the same picture from early on in your presentation, but adding what you found.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that is nice. I was wondering if you really need the upper graph.
No, I think
it's
fine.
I just wanted to say that I'm fixing cache rates.
Yeah,
and also the fact that you're fixing it at some point where it makes sense, right? That's a reasonable cache size. I don't know that if it is, but
I guess my problem with that graph is that I was forced to see what was a graph and figure that out and say, okay, it's the same that I just saw, and then it went.
Yeah. So could you use also instead of, could you use colors there? Because the write back and write through save are...
You should use colors.
I thought they were like upper bound and lower bound. Now I'm just realizing that
it's the values from there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but that's, right now is when I'm realizing that.
Yeah.
I see. So, okay.
But that's nice, you know, the fact that it's really, right back is really an upper bound for this. You cannot do better than right back. And that makes absolute change.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the graph is cool. I mean, the results are cool. But, okay.
The results are very good, I think.
Yeah.
So you just need to work on the overall presentation, and it would help to maybe remove one part, the duplication part.
Yeah.
So that you have more time to talk about the others.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a lot scale.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I saw there was like a big jump. I saw that the knob was very fine grained.
So you have 40 megabytes where you get the highest performance, around 40 megabytes of scale.
Yeah.
That's not much. Probably a quarter of a second.
Yeah, I think it would be good to motivate the why it is important to address writes, right, in a better way, using the data that you already have. I mean, I was just looking at one of our papers, I don't remember, maybe it was Bard, but there we have a read-to-write ratio across three workloads, right, at FIU. Maybe it's also there in RLD2.
Okay.
But you need to argue that a lot of people are making the same argument, that storage needs to be optimized for writes, and we are showing you how you can optimize it even further.
But that even that's not enough, because we need sync writes, not any writes.
It's not clear to me. I mean, if you slow down the storage enough, your async writes get converted into sync writes.
Yes.
Because your memory does not have any space anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes.
Right. So.
Yes.
You can think of it that way.
Actually, we are kind of pushing it that way. The reason Postmat here is behaving this way is because we have small RAM.
Yeah.
No, actually, in Borg we have both types of workloads. Read dominant and write dominant. Office is read dominant.
Oh, by the way, Postmat is a
male dominant.
Oh, it's
from
a micro.
It's
SRC map.
And
okay.
Web server is also
redone by but it's a male server role.
Mm-hmm. They defined them.
Yes.
Male server and news group server.
It's right dominant.
It's
metadata oriented.
Yeah.
Create file, delete file, and
yeah.
There's one that's
just a book.
For SRC map, all of them are right dominant.
But
yeah, that's right. I think that's the one I was looking at.
Yeah.
It's actually map all
but
right.
I don't know how, I mean, this is,
and
I mean, obviously,
why we didn't use traces.
I mean, this is representative because
yeah,
we saw that
like
they were, the but they were only
yeah.
the
we improve, right,
the VM that has
mean.
The
because
that has a
problem.
We don't
know
what
you
also, the one with all the traffic.
And the whole point of using SSD caches is that, you know, if you can store your working set in the SSD cache, your reads are taken care of, right? But writes are still not taken care of.
Yeah.
And therefore, writes are, although they might be in minority in a workload, and sometimes it's not the case, it's actually multiple times the number of reads. You
so
really have to optimize
yeah,
writes.
So it's interesting because there you have a lot more writes, but the number of unique content is a lot less. So
it could be
so
journaling.
So for instance, if we look at mail server, the read-to-write ratio is almost 10 writes to a read. But if you look at the unique content, it's like 6 or 8 reads are unique compared to one unique write.
Hmm.
So if you have 30 gigabytes of unique content versus 4 gigabytes,
writes are probably
so
mostly
overriding the journal.
Yeah, because we are unique. When we say here unique, it's unique in terms of address,
mm-hmm.
right? Not content unique.
So what that says is that in your tree that you created, you're going to have a lot of repeated action on the same nodes.
In the tree, what do you mean?
If you create a tree, right?
In your
dependency
graph. Dependency graph. Yeah,
you're gonna have a load of overlap
there.
Oh yeah.
So I need to go, but I sent you my detailed comments.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.